You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt on the AM 740 Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin.
And I'm the sous chef of the garden, Frank Proctor. Nice to have you about. And hey, Charlie, look who's back. David Gaskin, our
welcome
producer.
Welcome back, David.
Yeah, big trip up.
He cruised the West Coast.
Oh.
The inner sanctum, through the islands,
up to Skagway and beyond.
Ketchikan, Juneau, Alaska.
Glacier Bay. And
dolphins, whales.
Yeah, he used some of the ice, actually, to make some drinks up there, I'm told.
Yeah. It's good. Really nice ice.
Well, anyway, here we are on the long holiday weekend, Charlie.
No ice around here. It's hot.
No. And I just wanted to do a quick shout-out to one of our listeners. And I was delighted to get actually, she's contacted me several times. Ann Rutherford, who is with the Toronto Police 12 Division.
Hi, Ann.
Police Constable 6345. But anyway, had a chat with her yesterday. Just gave her a call to thank her for listening. And she listens into the garden show. And tells me she's got four animals. Huckleberry, who's a border collie. Riley, collie cross. Miss Alley Cat, she says, who was the perfect cat. And Georgie Girl, another cat.
But not so perfect by the sounds of it.
But she says, by the way, my dog Huckleberry was named after the song Moon River, one of my all-time favorites. And we were both sitting here, right, trying to
singing
figure, well,
it.
What's Huckleberry got to do with? Oh, wait a minute. Moon River, my Huckleberry friend and me, of course. And she goes on to say here, he had been tied to a post for the first 10 months of his life after being taken away from his mom at 5 weeks of age. And I thought it was a fitting name, what with his freckled nose looking for the rainbow's end. He's a great loving dog. We humans could learn a lot from animals with regards to forgiveness. Mm. So, hey, good morning and a shout out to Ann Rutherford,
and
one of the fine
puppies and
of
kitty cats.
Toronto
and,
Police Force. Delighted to have you listening.
Of course, Huckleberry is how we're going to segue into the garden show, right?
Absolutely. What a nice way to do that. Yeah, she thought I'd never get around to it.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the garden show. Did you want to give out the numbers before I make
absolutely,
some announcements?
Absolutely.
Or did
yes.
you want to tell more stories?
No.
Frank is so excited. He's going on holidays. Soon. So we're going to talk a bit more about that
a little
soon.
Later on, right? Okay. Phone numbers, my friends, if you're in the Toronto area, 416-360-0740. And then anywhere else in the province, it is toll-free 1-866-740-4740. And the mantra is call early, call often, one question per call. And policeman, patrolman Proctor is on duty, and I'll be finding you if you try and sneak in the second
That's
question.
Right. Yeah. All right. And a couple of upcoming events to mark your calendar or to participate in next Saturday, July the 7th from 2 till 4 p.m. The Huronia Rose Society will be hosting the annual Rose Show. It's happening at the Community Church of the Nazarene, which is 49 Ferris Lane in Barrie. Mm-hmm. Admission is $3 per adult, open to the public, of course, and all roses are grown by the society members. It is a judged event. So it's kind of interesting if you like seeing judged shows or what they call,
jury shows. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that, people put a lot of effort into growing and picking and preserving the perfect plant for this day, for these hours, right? And it will have already been judged. So, of course, the ribbons and awards will be out there and you'll be able to kind of see what people win for. There will be over 100 roses on display of all different varieties and colors. So that'll be pretty and probably very fragrant. Also coming up on Saturday, July 7th, is Delphinium Day.
Delphinium Day. I didn't realize there was a day devoted to delphiniums, but there is,
sorry,
obviously.
Joking.
That long pause.
Yes, plant.
She takes a drink of water.
Plant Paradise Country Gardens. Remember, we had Lorraine Roberts on the show a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah,
she
yeah.
owns the Plant Paradise Country Gardens. Her and her husband are hosting Delphinium Day. I will be there speaking. My subject
probably
is
nonstop.
when I'm not coughing.
Yeah, got a little
excuse
frog
me.
Your throat there.
I've got a piece of dust, I think. So I'll be speaking there that day. Lunch will be served. It's all very exciting. And like I said, that's next Saturday. It starts at 11 o'clock. Tickets are $30. Blooms for Africa. That's a very cool garden tour that's a nighttime tour.
Ooh, that sounds neat.
Blooms in the Night. It happens in historic Hamilton. That'll be Friday, July 27th and 28th. It's happening rain or shine. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. both those evenings, $20 per person, all in support of the Stephen Lewis Foundation. So that's very cool. Passports can be purchased at a whole bunch of different retailers in the area. Go to bloomsforafrica.org to find out where to get your ticket.
Okay.
Okay. And just a quick one as well. Back for its second year, the Toronto Botanical Gardens, every Thursday evening. Very nice outing, particularly in this hot weather. Mm-hmm. Great to be outside in the gardens. And what happens is every Thursday, there is music. There's the summer music series that takes place every evening from 7 to 8:30. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, there's an organic farmers market happening all afternoon and evening in the parking lot. So, and this year it's bigger and better than ever. Last year, I think they probably had about 20 vendors. I think this year it's twice as many. Plus, there's the cafe where you can purchase a nice light supper. So you can do your shopping, have your supper, and enjoy the fresh air, the gardens, and live music.
One-stop shop.
Exactly. Every
yeah, like
Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m., right up until October 4th.
Okay.
So certainly worth fitting in if you can.
Okay. We'll hold other announcements a little bit
There's
later,
just
or do you
one
want more to squeeze
more.
In?
Okay, one more quick one. This just came in last night. Sunday, July 15th from 10 to 5. There will be a garden tour happening in, it's to support the Carpenter Hospice in Burlington. Tickets are $15. It's the Carpenter Hospice Garden Tour. So the tickets are $15. You can purchase them at Holland Park Garden Gallery, Euro-style Flower Market in Burlington, and Cudmore Garden Center in Oakville. Eight beautiful gardens in the North Shore Boulevard and Lakeshore Road area. So you know what those are.
Yeah.
Whew, those are those massive estates, probably. So you'll need your golf cart.
You and I wouldn't be residing there, not anytime soon.
But it's very fun. I mean, for only $15, you get to actually go and see how some people live.
Yeah, peek through the windows. Ooh.
But even their gardens, I mean, whatever.
Gorgeous.
Tennis courts, horseshoe pits, all that stuff. Swimming pools.
Horseshoe pits. Well,
croquet.
We throw enough stuff around here in the show, I guarantee you.
Yeah, we
you
don't
that.
Even need a pit. We just throw the horses.
Well, David Gaskin has done his duty already. He's got the lines jammed, and we'll be back to talk to you folks. And you'll be talking with Charlie Dobbin, our resident gardener, master gardener, that's what I was trying to say. And she's here to answer all your questions, or at least some of them.
We'll be back. Or do her best.
Yeah, we'll do our best. Okay, back in just a couple of moments.
Don't change the radio station. Just because the weather changes, garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And on this long holiday weekend, Canada Day weekend, let's welcome Elizabeth to the line from Brampton. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's a beautiful morning, too.
Mm-hmm. Is it ever?
Gorgeous.
A year ago this past spring, we had a new stoop put at the front of our house. Mm-hmm. And before you get up to the main stoop, there's a piece that's about 4 feet wide and deep. And they've left a little rectangular shape about 22.5 wide and 22.5 inches mm-hmm. wide, 38 inches long, and it's filled with dirt for me to plant.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a little Japanese maple. And it's only 30 inches high.
Mm-hmm.
So I planted it in there. Now, I planted it in a 12-inch pot and sunk the pot into that little hole.
Okay.
So what I want to know is that going to be too close to the house for that little tree? And should I take it out of the pot or leave it in the pot?
Good questions, actually. I have two questions for you. One is, what direction does the front of your house face?
South. It gets the morning sun all morning and part of the afternoon sun.
Okay, so it's a bright, sunny, hot, fairly warm spot by the sounds of it.
Yeah, and it's a little green one. I've got a green one because I thought it would be cooler.
Yeah, and is it a weeping variety or an upright?
Well, it's very small, so the leaves are kind of feathery.
Mm-hmm. And do the branches trail down to the ground, or do the branches face up to the sky, like point up to the sky?
Well, they kind of go out to just out. They,
oh, okay.
I guess they droop.
They're
going
to weep, They're going, as they get longer, they'll start to go down to earth.
Yeah.
Well, because you don't remember the variety of Japanese maple, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, two things come to mind. Or actually, one more quick question. The stoop and all this creation of space, is it poured concrete or is it stone? It's white kind of blazing white concrete.
Yes.
Okay. So it tends to be very, southern exposures are, of course, very hot, sunny situations. When you've got white or light colored stone, you've got even more light because of the reflection of all the sun bouncing off of the concrete. Tends to be, again, makes it even hotter. Japanese maples with the fringy type leaves or the filigree leaves tend to burn. The leaves will get all brown and crispy on the edges if they're in too much sun.
Yes.
How are the leaves holding up right now?
They seem to be okay.
Okay, so that's good.
Now, and, I water it every day.
Yeah, which is not something you really want to have as a permanent lifestyle, having to never go away because you have to stay home and water your Japanese maple. Two things. And okay, and so in the pot, you mentioned that this little area, this 22 by 38 inch garden had been left, and that is soil down deep. It's not like there's an asphalt or something below that, is there?
No, I was able to dig right down, like bury this pot. It's quite a good...
You know what? If I were you, I would run with... It sounds like it's a lovely plant to have in that situation. If it looks nice, it's doing well, leave it there, but get it out of the pot. It'll be happier if it's not in the pot.
Okay. Now, the other thing I want to know, it's got a little stake up the trunk holding it, and I didn't know whether I should leave that stake with it or take the stake out.
Leave the stake for now,
okay.
Particularly since you're going to actually now permanently plant it. Whenever it's going to have, it's probably get really skinny little stems that have been trained up, actually.
Yeah.
Might even have more than one skinny little stem.
Mm-hmm.
So that stake's just going to help stabilize. Leave it for at least 1 year.
Okay.
Eventually that little stake's going to rot away anyway.
Okay.
But we generally always stake any tree for at least 1 year, but no longer.
Right.
Okay.
Now, I should wait till the fall to take that out of the pot and redo it?
No, you could do it now.
Oh, okay.
As long as you're not going anywhere, because with all this heat, again, you're going to have to stay on top of the watering.
Yeah.
A little transplanter fertilizer or quick start just to get some roots getting out beyond where the pot was.
Right.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks for joining the show, Elizabeth.
Bye.
Yeah. You are listening, by the way, to AM 740 here in Toronto, the Garden Show on the Air with Charlie Dobbin. And as is our want, or certainly mine, I start to do my exercises now.
I know. I see your eyes blinking up and down.
Well, there you go.
There's
my first eyelid going up and down and up. Okay, my other eyelid.
He's amazing. This Frank, man, he's in great shape.
No.
And it's because, you know, between his mouth going nonstop and his eyes going up and down, he's perfect. What an amazing human being, I tell you.
Thank you very much.
Frank and I both take something called Sierracil. It helps to keep us active. And of course, we want to be active because we want to be in good shape and we want to be pain-free while we're doing it. So Sierracil is very simple. It's a mineral, completely natural mineral supplement taken daily. Does seem to make a difference for us. Does seem to make a difference for many people. The Sierracil people believe that it can help just about everybody, and you'll know within 14 days whether it can help you or not. Try it. If it doesn't work, money back. Give them a call at 1-877-JOINT-14 or check their website, sierracil.ca. As well, you can purchase Sierracil at many of the food, natural food stores and all good health mart locations, and Hamilton, Woodbridge, Bramley, Guelph, Cambridge, two Burlington locations, Mississauga and Aurora.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than we do realize. And should little creatures become a big problem, well, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Frank Proctor, the sous chef of the garden, along with Charlie Dobbin, welcoming you. And thank you for sharing part of your long holiday weekend with us. And that includes, of course, Catherine, who's calling in from T.O., which is probably just around the corner. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Frank.
Yes.
And Charlie.
Morning.
Morning. I'm calling about hostas.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of large hostas, beautiful,
nice.
Different varieties. But I would like very much to propagate some of them. What I'm wondering is, now that they're so large, is should I not do it now? And when I do it, should I take chunks out or should I dig up the whole plant, which will really be major, and take pieces out then that way?
Great question. Okay, so you don't have to dig up the whole plant.
No.
Unless for some reason you want to move the whole plant.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
When I do any division on my hostas, when they get too big, I find the easiest time to do the dividing is with a nice sharp shovel in the spring. before the leaves have unfurled, when they're still just little pointy, you know, growing points coming up out of the ground.
Yeah.
And it's quite clear. You can see then, particularly with the large hostas, I mean, they're like monster protuberances coming up out of the ground. I mean, they're just erupting out of the ground. And that, to me, is the easiest time to go in with a sharp shovel, sort of eyeball where I want to take out. And of course, you'll be taking out from the outer edge.
Yes.
Unless for some reason, you know, like I say, you want to move the whole thing, then you'll lift the whole thing and chop it up into smaller bits. Find friends that want some pieces of the hostas.
Oh,
or,
I already have.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, you can do it now, but they will not transplant well now because it's so hot.
Yes.
You can certainly do the splitting that we're referring to once they are in leaf, but you would want to do it in the cooler weather back in sort of, you know, May rather than now, just because it is just too hot. You'll find that, again, they could survive the process, but they're not going to look real pretty in somebody's garden this year. They're just going to tend to wilt and flag and look kind of crummy this summer. Chances are they will survive and come up beautifully next spring.
Yeah.
But why not just wait till next spring and plant them and have them look great all next year that way?
That sounds very about what I thought was going to be the answer.
And of course, you can do it in the fall as well. You know, if fall works with your schedule and it's cool weather, again, we're chopping them all up. They're not going to look that great, but it's the end of the season anyway, right?
So would fall be just as safe as spring?
Yes. Just the big leaves are in the way. That's what makes it hard. They all get kind of torn up.
Once the leaves start to look not so pretty, I mean, is that too late?
No. For any dividing or transplanting in the fall, we try to have a window of about 4 to 6 weeks between that transplanting or dividing and the first real hard frost.
I see.
So in Toronto, our hard frosts haven't been coming till November, typically, mid to late November. So you've got right up until the end of September, really, to do whatever kind of dividing you want to do with things like hostas. Give them to your friends, have them plant them right away, slap in a little bit of bone meal or a little quick start just to get those roots going, and then there you are. Winter comes and everything looks great next spring.
Well, thank you very much. I just might do a little bit of both, some in the fall and then some in the spring.
Sometimes that way, it's a lot of work, so sometimes it's nice to split it up like that.
Yes, it is a lot of work, but they are so worthwhile.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, good stuff. Thanks a lot, Catherine.
Thank you very much.
Okay, have a great day. Thanks for joining us here on The Garden Show from AM 740. And next on the list, I see that David Gaskin has been chatting with Verna in Richmond Hill. Hello, Verna. Hi.
Hi there.
Morning.
I have a problem with ants, but I have never seen these ants before. They're maybe about maximum a quarter inch. They're sort of the color of a new chestnut, sort of reddy-brown.
Mm-hmm.
They're not out a lot, and the first time I saw them, which was about 5, 6, 7 years ago, I was walking out the driveway, and I thought, who spilled peat moss on my driveway?
Oh, there's so many of them.
Yeah, there's hundreds.
Yeah.
And by the time I came in, dropped my groceries, came back out with a can of rake, because that's all I had at the time. They were gone. They don't stay out. I've never seen them come out. I've never seen them go in. I've seen them out for a wee little while, but it's sort of like you've fallen over. There was no anthill. When they started, they were coming out between my driveway and the house, and now they've transferred themselves down to the front lawn. Are they dangerous? Are they doing damage to anything? Are they just something to ignore?
One of them obviously is a clairvoyant.
Because
they know you're coming after them, so they disappear.
They've been watching the TV commercials,
right? That's right.
You went in for the raid.
No!
And they knew. So.
No, but I have tried ant traps and the boric acid and all that stuff, and it doesn't seem to grab them as much as the normal ants you have in your property.
Well, the thing about ants, you have to remember, is that ants don't eat plants. Ants are actually the great cleaners of the world. They are scavengers. They clean up dead stuff. And so they're actually really, really helpful animals and insects. However, if they make a home in your lawn, of course, then you get the hill and then it makes it hard to mow. Right. Or if they make a bit of a home in your garden, again, sometimes it'll end up with a bit of a hill, but they excavate the soil around the roots of plants to make their little home there. And of course, then the roots are exposed to the air and then that plant typically dies. So that's when ants can be frustrating in the garden. Otherwise, ants aren't doing any harm to any part of your property.
OK, that's good.
Yeah.
That's all I really want.
Well, that's great.
You know what they are? Because I've never seen them and nobody can even help me with them. They say the same thing. The color of chestnut, they're like a very shiny, reddy brown.
Mm-hmm. I think I have seen those ants. I live in Richmond Hill as well.
Huh.
I think I have seen those ants recently at my house. And actually, they were all around a parsley plant.
Did they eat the plant?
No, they're not. But I was worried that they were going to kill the plant because of their excavation at the base. Mm. So I went and got my handy dandy tub of cinnamon that I now have in quantity and sprinkled cinnamon over top of the parsley because, of course, it wasn't going to hurt the parsley. And I just wanted the ants to go somewhere else.
And they don't like the...
They don't like cinnamon.
I haven't tried it, but I've heard that.
Yeah, when
I can just ignore it. The other thing is if you go near them when they're out with a can of Raid or something, they do climb all over you. But they don't bite.
No, that's good.
You know, they're not intrusive on the body, but it's just itchy.
Yeah, well, that's it. Well, and I know, Richmond Hill does have some fire ants I've read about.
Mm.
And
oh,
that's...
Because fire ants are red, aren't they?
They're black, actually. The difference between a fire ant and a regular ant is that when you hurt one ant normally, like you step on it by mistake, all the other ones run away. Whereas when you hurt one fire ant by mistake, they all go after you. It's like a completely opposite behavior. They charge and they bite. So that's where fire ants are scary because they can really, it can hurt. It's not just one bite. You get like 100 bites, right? And so they're quite painful from what I understand. I haven't seen any fire ants, but I understand that they are in Richmond Hill in some places. So to be watched for.
Well, thanks a lot for
thanks
the call.
Thanks,
thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care. You are listening to The Garden Show from AM 740. Phone numbers in Toronto, 416-360-0740. And, of course, from anywhere in the province, it's toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Let's do a little traveling here, Charlie, to Woodstock. Have a word or two with Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Good
morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
It's nice to talk to both of you again.
Yeah.
I've got a rose bed.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time I used to be able to get a Wilson's FloraGuard.
Mm-hmm.
It was a concentrate which I mixed up and it was a insecticide and a fungicide.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't get it anymore. I can't find it anywhere.
It's not on the market anymore. Unless you go to the States and buy it and bring it back illegally, but I didn't say that.
Well, I've been thinking about going there because it really worked. And it was nice you could one job.
Well, what's going on with your roses? What's happening with your roses?
Well, I've got some black spot. Mm-hmm. A little while ago, I had some aphids on the ants or on the roses and stuff.
Okay, but you know aphids aren't a huge deal. You see them very easily. They're always on the growing tips, and they can be annihilated so easily just with some soapy water or even with a spray of the hose. Sometimes you can knock them off. So, but the black spot, you'll need to avoid that happening. You need to kind of stay on top of like a fungal spray, fungicide spray, particularly when we get into humid and rainy conditions. And that was where your FloraGuard or FloraTect came in because it was a fungicide that prevented the black spot. But you can still get sulfur, garden sulfur, in a spray form to spray onto your roses just like you used to spray the FloraGuard or FloraTect.
Yeah, lime sulfur worked well in the spring.
Yeah, it does. It's a great...
spray the ground, but this year got hot too fast.
I know.
Yeah.
It did. But no,
it burns the flowers.
But just straight sulfur, and it'll be for sale in a liquid form, and it'll say right on it, garden fungicide. And the active ingredient will be just straight sulfur. There won't be any lime in it. Do follow the instructions. Of course, you never spray anything at the hot, noon when it's 30 degrees onto roses where they're in full sun because that is very, very harmful to them. But certainly the sulfur can work exactly the same as all those fungicides we had in the past. None of those fungicides ever, they treated the problem from spreading. They prevented the problem, but they never cured the problem. Fungal diseases can't be cured. They have to be prevented.
Right.
And that's what black spot is. It is a fungus.
Yes. Okay. Do you know of any home remedies?
There's a whole bunch of them out there that are, to do with using baking soda baking soda, water, garlic. There's 101 different sort of home remedies out there. I don't typically use them. You know why? Because when I have roses, if I have roses that consistently get black spot and are just too much work and have to be sprayed too consistently, I get rid of them and I bring a new rose in that is totally resistant to that disease, and I don't have that problem. See, remember Sherry Lynn Safer, our rose expert, who was on the show? She was a big proponent of organic rose gardening, and it had a lot to do with choosing rose varieties and cultivars that will not give you problems, will not have a lot of fungal diseases. And that's really where it's going in the rose world these days, is into newer varieties that are resistant to black spot and powdery mildew and all that.
Do you have
that.
A lot of roses you're dealing with there, Tom, or...?
About 20.
Yeah. Oh, and some of them are probably fairly old. You've had them for a number of years.
Some I've had for over 20 years.
Oh, right. Gosh,
yeah. Yeah, so you've got... And, of course, some of those we love. Like, we don't want to lose them. So, you know, you kind of have to say, all right, one or the other, right? Either I get newer varieties that are going to be less work, or I stick with my tried and true favorites that I love, but I have to stay on top of spraying them to avoid some of the fungals. The other thing is mulch. Do you mulch the soil around your roses?
I mulch this year for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it works really well. Really helps keep things like black spot down. And do all your watering early in the day and never water the foliage, right? You want to keep your foliage dry when you're watering.
Oh, so water the roots only.
Exactly.
And roses don't like wet feet at night.
No, exactly. So, and that's where a soaker hose is really effective, though they're a bit hard to put out once the roses start to grow. But, you know, even if you have the time in the morning, go out there and just water low, water at ground level, all your roses.
I do a lot of my watering with rainwater.
Perfect. They love that. Yeah. It's the best. And, you know, roses don't even take that much water. Like, my roses are in the hottest spot in my garden. I think I've watered them once this year so far. Like, I just don't water them. They're fine.
Yeah.
You rarely see a rose suffer for lack of water.
Oh, they have an awful root system.
Well, that's what I mean. The older ones have huge root systems. They find the water. You don't need to water them very often.
No.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
I broke a shovel off this year. I was trying to dig a tulip out that it came up in my rose bed.
That'll teach you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks a lot, Tom. Hopefully Charlie's been of help there.
Okay,
thanks very much. Tom. Thanks for your call.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. 9:36 our time here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Did you want to squeeze something in here?
I did. Is that all right with you?
Well, yeah, I think I can. Yes, okay, go ahead.
You are such a control freak. This is The Garden Show. I just want to tell you a little bit about my week. I had a busy week, and it was pretty fun. This past Tuesday, I flew to Ottawa for the day. Arbor Memorial, which is a large cemetery company, was having their annual general meeting. So people from across Canada were coming together in Ottawa. Property managers were meeting and talking a lot about what goes on running cemeteries.
Yeah.
So the company flew me to Ottawa to speak to the property managers, to speak on subject of actually how to do WOW container gardens. Because, you know, a lot of cemeteries, that's part of what they have to do, is have beautiful grounds. And so I was there to give them some ideas and inspiration and that sort of thing. It's pretty challenging, though, because, you know, people from Calgary, people from Montreal, people
BC,
from Chatham. I mean, they're gardening in all different environments, but still, just trying to, you know, give them some kind of all-purpose inspirational ideas. It was fun. It was really nice way to spend the day. Then on Thursday, I took a drive out to Prince Edward County, which is one of both you and my sort of jewels that we don't want to tell anybody about because we
don't want to overrun with tourists. My God, no. Right.
No, it's such a pretty part of Ontario. The weather was gorgeous. So yeah, I was there overnight on Thursday, yesterday, and all that wind, right? Body surfing in Lake Ontario. It was really fun. It was like chilly, but refreshing. But in our driving around, myself and my friend Heather, we're just driving one of the little roads, and there's a sign on the side of the road that says Pearl's Plants. So Pearl's Plants. We go, hey, should we stop and see what kind of plants Pearl has? So, you know, screech, U-turn, back around, and we stop the car, and sure enough, a big maple tree, and who's sitting under the maple tree but...
Gotta be Pearl.
Pearl, yep. So Pearl comes out from underneath the maple tree, and she's kind of tottering along, and Pearl just launches into being a real character.
You had a great time.
And she's a geranium person. And I guess, you know, she over the years, I mean, I guess she's been in this one location for 42 years, has been a geranium grower, and people used to come to her to get geraniums. Yeah. Now she said not so much. People go to Loblaws to get their geraniums. They're not buying them from her. She has a lot of geraniums and some very unusual ones. So both Heather and I went away from Pearl's plants and Pearl with little pots of a geranium that Pearl didn't know what it was called, but it was something that her mom gave her.
Yeah, she said this plant is older than I am.
Well, Pearl's 84.
Yeah.
So her mom had this plant. Her mom was from the Renfrew County area, so up near Ottawa. So her mom probably got it up there somewhere.
Right.
Very unusual geranium. The flower almost looks like a primula. It's very multi-petaled, probably about a triple, you know, instead of a double amount of flowers, it's probably a triple amount of flowers, white with pink edges to the petals, but small and very dense and compact flower. Anyway, since Pearl didn't have a name for it, Heather and I named it Pearl's Petticoat. So we now have a geranium. I'm going to have to look it up. It might be out there and have a real name. But for now, we're calling it Pearl's Petticoat Geranium. And it's really neat and unusual. And it's very fun. I love stories that go with plants. So
absolutely.
I'll be saving that one as well.
Okay. And you're up near where I have
done. You're heading soon.
We're heading very shortly to Lake on the Mountain Resort, which is near Consequon, where you were.
Well, is it near Consequon?
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe 20 minutes. Drive, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the county, yeah, I guess the county's pretty big. I mean, it's got various towns and stuff. And I was near Consequon where I was staying. And the owners of Lake of the Mountain have a home right there.
Joan Kretchen. Yeah.
Have a home on the same road where my friend Heather has a home.
They are great people. I'm looking forward so much to seeing
them
again.
I tell you, a bunch of characters there, and I met a few.
Well, we better meet some of our folks who are waiting on the line very, very patiently, but we'll be back to you folks in just a couple of moments. First of all, we must do our exercises.
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
I'm going to change up a little bit here. Okay, I'm going to do the Hawaiian.
Hula.
Hula.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
That's good exercise.
The skirt looks better than the cape. I think this is a good idea. All right. The reason Frank is being such a wacko is because he took his Sierra Sil today, and he likes to maintain freedom and do all his favorite activities like hula dancing pain-free. So reduced aches, reduced stiffness. Oh, man. What a guy. So Sierra Sil is something that we recommend you might want to try because it does keep us pain-free and we can maintain all of our favorite activities. Pick it up at your local health food store like Ambrosia Natural Foods in Newmarket and in Thornhill, or buy it on the web, sierrasil.ca, or give them a call for more information. 1-877-JOINT-14.
Aloha.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, phlox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
And Frank Proctor along for the ride here, having fun on this Saturday morning, part of the long holiday weekend, as we say hi to Kim in Brampton. Hi, Kim.
You went to the wrong
caller.
Can you hear me? Yes, good morning.
Okay, did I go to the wrong caller? I'm
great
sorry.
Great information, well presented. I retain everything you say.
Wonderful.
This is my question. I have what is called a hibiscus fireball. It's a perennial. It's a rose mallow.
Right.
And it grows outside, and it grows, it says 4.5 feet, but mine grows to 6. And it says, large, attractive flowers. It doesn't say Jurassic Park wildflowers, which is not what I wanted, but
just
I have three of them.
Supposed to know so this, yeah.
It says that you can trim it and treat it as a hedge, but I'm afraid to trim it because I feel like I'm amputating it. So can I do that, and when do I do that?
Okay, so this is a herbaceous hibiscus. So that means that it dies down every winter and disappears and then grows up from the root every spring, 6 feet tall, with flowers that are the size of a
basketball.
Volkswagen.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're really big. So trim it and treat it as a hedge. You're right. If you tried to do that, you would end up taking off some of the flowers.
Right. And that's what it says on the label here.
Right. Well, see, the other thing is, with many of these monster flowering plants, if you took off one bud, you're going to end up with more buds.
Okay.
So you'll have more flowers but smaller ones, which might be a good option for you if those Volkswagen-sized blooms are just too Jurassic Park-looking for
they
you.
Are.
So, yeah, don't, you know what, because everything is ahead this year. Normally, that plant wouldn't flower till mid-August, early August at the soonest, but is it showing some buds now?
Very few.
Okay. So like it's ahead of schedule. Everything is. What you could do if you want to eliminate some of those monster flowers is do that. Do some trimming. It will keep it lower, more wider, but lower, because it's going to get bushy if you take off the top sort of 6 inches on the entire plant.
Okay.
Or even 8 inches.
Okay, I'll take 8.
Yeah. So it's just going to be bushier, wider, and you'll have more flowers, but smaller ones.
Oh, perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Kim, for joining us here on The Garden Show from AM 740. Now, let's go out to Scarborough. Have a word with Joyce. Good morning.
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 Charlie, help. In the past, because the weather has been a bit cooler, my old Canada rose, which I've had for about 12, 14 years, has bloomed. All the blooms have been out and all dried up, and I've done all my trimmings. Now, would I be able to get roses again later on, or is this it for the year?
You know, I'm not familiar enough with O Canada Rose, but probably it is what is considered an ever-blooming rose. Very few roses out there now are bloom once only and then done for the season. There are a few of the older shrub roses and rambling roses that'll sometimes do that, but generally all the roses that are in cultivation will have that first flush of blooms. And again, this year, everything's ahead. So
yes.
The flush is pretty much done now.
Yes.
There might be a few buds still coming, but of course they looked amazing 10 days ago and we'll see fewer buds. Do trim them. And of course, you remember you deadhead your roses down to the first outward facing leaf, like outward off the plant,
okay,
that's got at least 3 leaflets,
okay,
3 or 5, but even to go to where there's 3. And new shoots will start to grow and buds will form.
Okay, now, do I have to give it a little extra fertilizer because I've done the trimmings?
Have you? Did you fertilize in the spring?
Yes, I did.
And what kind of fertilizer did you use?
Oh, my goodness.
What was it, like a what? Liquid?
Solid? It was, yes, a granular. Not a granular. It's a liquid, you know.
Mixed powder.
Miracle-Gro, yep. One of those Miracle-Gro things.
Definitely. Fertilize again.
Okay, now I've done all my trimmings, as I said.
Mm-hmm.
Now I normally do this for my Lamium also. Now, do I have to give it extra fertilizer again?
I wouldn't fertilize Lamium ever.
Really?
Oh, just because it just grows everywhere. It'll grow sun, shade, dry, wet.
It'll take over.
Yeah, it's a great all-purpose plant because it will grow where nothing grows.
Is it a native plant?
No.
Okay.
But unless you love your Lamium so much, yes, you can fertilize it. I'm being a bit rude when I say it. It's just me. I don't fertilize it because I find it does, as Frank said, it can be a bit of a takeover plant. So with plants that tend to take over, I like to stress them a bit, not tender, loving, care them too much.
Okay.
Unlike my roses where I do want to tender, loving, care them because I want, you know, maximum beauty from them.
Okay, then. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank
you're very
you,
welcome.
Joyce.
Goodbye.
For joining us here in the Garden Show from AM 740. And I'm going to do a little alliteration here. Let's clip along to Caledon to say hi to Colleen.
Oh, hey, my
how
goodness.
About that? Hello, Colleen.
Morning.
Hi, Colleen.
Hello.
Hello.
It's Pauline.
Oh, Pauline.
I'm sorry.
That alliteration didn't work.
That's fine.
We're going to poke along.
With regard to my lawn fertilizing, is there a time to fertilize in the summer, your lawn?
Well, did you fertilize this spring?
Did we fertilize in the spring?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did fertilize in the spring. I was just checking my husband.
Yeah. When it's really hot, like this sort of 35 degrees, we don't typically do a lot of fertilizing because nothing really grows when it gets really hot. However, it is going to cool down. Like we're seeing that the nights are starting to get a little cooler. If your lawn is looking a bit peaked, meaning it's not as green as you'd like it to be.
No, it's really dry.
Yeah. Well, that might be partially from water because it has been dry. Also soil. Remember, it's all about good soil.
Uh-huh.
We do use fertilizer as a quick fix on our lawns because it will just green the lawn up overnight. But ultimately for a healthy lawn, top dress and overseed, right? That's that half inch of good quality soil going right over top of the lawn and seed going into, you know, scattered in amongst that soil, either spring or fall, to help have a healthy lawn and get it through some of these drought kind of conditions. But yes, you can fertilize them. Many of the fertilizer manufacturers will always recommend up to as many as 4 fertilizings per season. So spring, early spring, late spring, late summer and fall as
the late summer. Yeah. But when we fertilize right now, if we should put tops, not now, but in the spring, mm-hmm. the birds eat the seeds. So should we be putting the topsoil over the seeds then? Because
that's a really good point. And the birds will eat the grass seed. But you, grass seed doesn't want to be covered with much soil.
It shouldn't cover it with much soil.
No.
Because we have lots of birds around.
Well, that's right. So what if you have just a sparse lawn and you're needing to thicken it up a bit, the most important thing is that the seed gets down in contact with the soil. Otherwise, the seed won't grow anyway.
What about rolling it? Is that too heavy?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of rolling, but some people are. They find that just helps take out some of the lumps and bumps. Mm-hmm. Mostly what I'll do is I'll scatter the soil, scatter the seed, and then get out my rake and rake lightly through so that the seed will drop down better, the soil gets in between the existing blades of grass, and then get the sprinkler out because, of course, you know, the seed won't grow without
right.
moisture.
But you never put topsoil over the grass?
If I do, it's a very, very fine layer. It's 1/8 inch, 1/4 inch at the absolute most.
Okay, so if I'm going to fertilize, wait until the
cooler.
It's cooler.
Yeah, give it another couple of days. It's going to cool
and
off.
What is the middle number?
Well, you'll use any good quality fertilizer. Scott's, as an example, has Turf Builder. I don't remember what the numbers are. Turf Builder, which is very effective. I remember last year putting it on my lawn, and I have a strip beside my driveway that's mine, and then my neighbor's front lawn is abutting my lawn. And I went down my strip with the Turf Builder,
yes.
and my neighbor came over like a week later and said, "What did you put on your lawn?" It was like so obvious. Mine was so green, like you know.
You are nasty.
Yeah, like just whoof, Kelly green.
You wouldn't
green.
Just spread a little over on your neighbors to make
well,
it?
Well, I would have had to do his whole front lawn. So I didn't. So I did mine. Anyway, it was really obvious where mine was so green and his was not so green. So I told him I'd use Turf Builder. So that's very effective.
So Scott Turf Builder.
Yeah, and this year, though, I used the organic form of Scott's lawn fertilizer, which is going to escape me. I'm going to have to look it up, and I'll tell you later. They're both slow release fertilizer. It's just that the one is from organic sources or natural sources, whereas Turf Builder is completely synthetic, made in a lab. Both of them are very effective, but Turf Builder is almost instant, and you will have to mow more often.
That's okay.
Okay. Thank you, Colleen. Thank you very much for calling in. Okay, have a good day and a wonderful weekend here, our Canada Day long weekend ahead of us here with the excellent weather. We'll be back to chat with, let's see, who we got in line. Okay, Diane, listening in from Fergus, will be to you in just a couple of moments here on The Garden Show from AM 740.
Don't change the radio station. Just because the weather changes, garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
All righty, we're at 9:54, so a little bit of time left to talk to our listeners. You have a little homework you've done here.
Yeah. I know. How fast am I? Our last caller, Pauline, was asking about lawn fertilizer. I mentioned Turf Builder, which is very effective, made my neighbor jealous, and he had to go out and buy some. But the one I used this year, which wasn't quite as dramatic, but certainly has done a fine job feeding my lawn, and I haven't had to mow more than every 7 days with this particular one, is also made by Scott's. It's an EcoSense natural lawn fertilizer. The numbers are 1005. So not quite as much of a sort of plants on steroids look that we get with the Turf Builder. So it kind of depends what you want. I just don't like mowing more than once a week. And this is one with the little
and
puppy
Elliot
dog.
And Elliot doesn't mow for you?
No, my son mows when he's home, but I haven't told you, my son is now up in Fort McMurray.
Holy cow,
supporting
that's
the Canadian economy and the oil patch, working with the Fireproofers Union. So he is working 2 weeks on, 1 week off. So he's back up there now working and not mowing my lawn for me, unfortunately.
Alrighty. Hey, it's off to Fergus we go. Diane. Ooh, Gadfrey Daniels. Earwigs. Ooh.
Gadfrey
creepy
Daniels.
Crawlies. Yeah.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning, and thank you so much for taking my call. I have a huge problem this year with earwigs in my planters. The flowers have been eaten. The lobelias are just chewed right off.
Mm-hmm. They love flowers.
I've lost my begonias. I've had to replace them.
I know. They chew all the edges, and they make everything ragged.
Yeah.
Drive me nuts.
And what can I do about these
when
earwigs?
You say planters, are like pots, containers?
Yes, they're pots. And I put, this year I did something different. I put the pots in the garden instead of putting the flowers right in the garden.
Okay.
I just wanted to have a different look. And I don't know if that was a good deal or not.
Well, yeah, you've kind of set up. See, the thing about the pots is you kind of set up a bit of an earwig hotel. Earwigs hide all day out of the sun. Now, we'll find them under the leaves, sometimes in the parsley patch and that sort of thing. The chard, all those things get covered in earwigs during the day, but from below, they come out at night to chew. When you've got pots outside, they, of course, can so easily hide in the pot. The soil is nice and easy to climb into, and then they just sleep all day in that nice cool spot and come out at night.
Dear.
One thing I would suggest you do, are these like really big containers? They'd be hard to lift up out of the garden?
I couldn't lift them, no.
Oh, okay.
No, my husband and I couldn't lift them. They're fair size. You know, so, a lot of soil in them and so on.
Right, so if you're going to do this again next year, and just a tip for anybody who's working with container gardens, put them up on feet. Put them up on bricks or chunks of 2x4 or whatever. Just get them up off the ground.
Okay.
You will eliminate a lot of earwigs getting into the pots by lifting them up that way.
Oh, okay.
For now, though, your best bet is to provide a trap for the earwigs. And this is any trapping of earwigs does require emptying the traps. So little pieces of hose or hollow tubing of any kind on the surface of the soil, either in your containers or in your gardens, they will hide in those little hollow piees of hose or tubing at night as the sun starts to come up at dawn. They'll think that's a pretty handy little hotel.
Okay.
So they'll climb in there. Your job once the sun is up is to go out and empty those little hollow tubes. Tip them up on their side. All the little earwigs will come sliding out. Just have a tin can ready with some water and a drop of oil or soap in it, and they will all drown in your little can, and you can giggle and laugh and enjoy them dying. You'll lower the population. You'll never get rid of all of them, but you can certainly lower the population by trapping them and annihilating them during the day.
So many earwigs this year.
It's a big year for earwigs.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a good year for them.
Yeah,
it?
Perfect conditions for them.
Well, thank you again.
Okay.
And I'll give it a try.
All right.
Thanks,
good
Diane.
Luck with
thank
that.
I love that term, earwig hotel.
Yeah, I know.
I wonder if they have room service.
They don't. They're voracious.
Nasty little beasts.
No, we don't like those at all.
Now, I don't think we have time for another caller, unfortunately.
I don't think we do either.
No. So, while we get ready, I see the boys have moved into position Dave's Corner Garage. Yeah, and Alan Gelman and guests are ensconced safely in our studio just opposite us. And they look in fine form, I must say.
They do. You know what? I got a quick email here. Let me cover this. From Beverly in Georgetown. She writes about enjoying the show, but wants to get rid of clover in her lawn that they seem to be taking over. Now, the thing about clover in the lawn is, I know, clover's not a grass, but the nice thing about clover is clover has a taproot, so it withstands drought and stays green. Clover is a legume plant, so it fertilizes itself. It takes nitrogen right out of the air, fixes it into a form that it can use the nitrogen. So clover is one of our best, most drought-tolerant, easy to care for lawn alternatives out there. So that's why I don't like saying
damn clever little plant, really.
Not a good idea to get rid of clover, but it's still not a grass.
Mm.
So what do you do to get rid of clover? That's where you go to your Weed Be Gone. Weed Be Gone, or particularly early in the season, will help annihilate clover, or you dig it. And of course, those tap roots, you need a long screwdriver or a long tool. After the soil is nice and moist, you can pull the clover out that way if it's really bothering you. But I personally don't mind clover in my lawn. I let it work its way in there.
Okay.
All right.
Just before we close out, I have to quick little note to my wife, Di. Hopefully she's tuned in.
Yeah.
Turn your phone on, Di. I'm going to have an interview with her a little later on, but a show she's directing in Showboat Theater.
Nice.
In Port Colborne.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
And we'll hear more about your gardenia next year. Next week. I know my mom's is doing well.
Oh, yeah.
And yours is as well.
Yes, it is.
Have a wonderful Canada Day.
And
thank
you too, Charlie.
Frank. And thanks, everybody, for your good calls.
And
thanks,
David.
Dave, for your help. See you all next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.